Anadolu Meraları. Onarıcı.
Hello, once again. We are hosting Alan Saver today. Alan, the most common word I heard from you has been management so far. Where do you put like policies, either in national level or so on? Where do you put that? How we should make policies, and how do you compare them with management?
All right, management actually covers all of policy. Management just means the things you are managing, and I'll come to that in a moment. But that's on the farm, on the fishermen, the foresters, the wildlife management, the pastoralists, managing on the land, people managing in their homes, managing their lives, etc. And then it goes to managing their companies and anything that people are managing. And then that very much goes to policy, because that's what governments do. They manage through policy, through developing a policy and then laws and regulations that follow it. So policy is 100% management, but so are development projects. So when the United Nations comes up with its sustainable development goals, those are all management. They are spelling out policies, objectives, etc. So all of this is management. And what we need young people particularly to understand is you can take two big divisions, if you like. If you think of everything we make in our lives, and the computers we're using, the cell phones we use, the space exploration vehicles, the bridges, the cities, the cars, the bicycles, it doesn't matter what it is, the toothbrush, everything we make in the world is not complex. It's defined as complicated. Some of the things like space exploration vehicles can be very complicated. If we make electricity from sun and wind, we are making something. We're not dealing with complexity. And everything we make, we tend to be successful in. Now, if you think about everything we manage, oceans, fisheries, croplands, pastoralists, organizations, religions, churches, our families, in businesses, everything we manage, we are dealing with complexity. Everything we manage doesn't keep working, it keeps working. It doesn't stop if a battery runs out of power or fuel runs out or a part breaks, like everything we manage make does. So everything we make is not complex because it's not self-organizing, and it stops if a part breaks or a piece is missing or fuel runs out, etc. Now, everything we manage keeps going no matter what we do. If the whole board of a company or staff dies, the company doesn't die, it reforms and carries on. If members of the family die, the family carries on in changed form. It doesn't matter what we look at in management, it is self-organizing and does not stop if a part is missing. If we're managing in nature and species die out, nature continues in changed form without those species. Species have been dying throughout history and have been developing. All right, so management is what we have a difficulty with because of that complexity. And that complexity of management we face at every level, from family managing up until governance and policies, etc. And really, we're only managing two things in the world: human organizations, from families to churches and governments and institutions and companies and environmental organizations and farms and so on. So we're managing human organizations in some form, or we're managing nature, and they are complex. And that's what we've never been able to do well in history until we discovered the holistic framework. Now, so when you look at management, that's where we're running into trouble, into endless wars and conflicts and everything. And that is due very largely to reductionist management. All management by humans is reductionist. Now, explaining that very briefly, if you think about it, the reason we manage is to improve our lives. And we take the web of complexity in our lives, social, our cultural complexity, environmental complexity, and the economic complexity, and inevitably, even in the most sophisticated interdisciplinary scientific teams, we reduce that complexity to a simple reason for our management action or policy. And the reason we reduce it to is to meet a need. We need more food, we need more profit, we need this, we need that, or to meet a desire. We desire more of this, that, and the other, or less of this, that, and the other, or we're developing a solution to a problem. We're trying to solve a problem. And when you look at development projects and you look at policies, the only reason, basically, that you have development projects by organizations or policies by governments and other organizations is to address a problem. We don't form a policy for any other reason. So we take the complexity, let's say in America, of excessive drug use in our families, we reduce that complexity to the drug problem. They develop policies with thousands of people developing the policy, fully aware that it'll have social, economic consequences and environmental consequences maybe, and they come up with a policy. And what happens? We get unintended consequences. Drug use increases in America. Violence spreads across the borders. Violence spreads to North Africa from America because of drugs, etc. Or you can look at, I'm taking the Americans as an example because they have the greatest concentration of scientists ever known in the history of the world. If you take their policy on drugs, it's increased drugs use. If you take the policy on soil conservation, in the United States, developed by thousands of wonderful scientists, it increased soil erosion. It didn't decrease it. If you take their present war on weeds, their policy on noxious, invasive weeds, they've spent over $1 billion every year for the 35-odd years I've been here. They've never killed a single species off in a single state. They've poisoned the water, poisoned the environment, bankrupted farmers. Enormous unintended consequences. If you take their policy on terrorism, it's expanding terrorism and costs enormous amounts of money, etc. It doesn't matter where you look. Our policies, if you come to Turkey and we were to look at every one of your policies, even without being there, I can guarantee you they're likely to lead to unintended consequences. And this will keep happening. And it's not because people are bad or anything else. It's because we reduce the complexity to the problem. So yes, it covers policies. And we overcome that at any level, from the household right up to governance, by using the holistic framework where we do not reduce that complexity. So we develop, get the people in the country, in the situation, in the family, whatever is being managed, we get those people to develop what we call a holistic context, which is how spells out how everybody wants their life to be based on their culture, their spiritual values, whatever those are. And we tie that to their life-supporting environment. In the state, it'll have to be 500 years from now for our descendants to be living a life like that. And now we have a holistic context, and now we go about meeting our needs, our desires, or in case of policy or development projects, we develop the solution to the problem in that holistic context, not in the context of just the problem. And it works, and it's so simple and so easy to teach people to do.
Well, that's very interesting to even if I heard all this like maybe five times before from you, it's still surprising for me to realize how embedded this kind of paradigm of, managing against, actually. Because, even amongst young people that I'm talking, you know, and I and you ask, like, for instance, why you do this? Why you go to work? Why are you still working on this job? They tell you, I am doing this not to blah, blah, blah. So we are doing everything against a problem, a conceived problem, not towards the context that we, as you say, identify for ourselves or for whatever whole we are managing. So can we say that it's actually a paradigm shift from managing against to managing towards, kind of?
Yes, it is, Murakan. There's been one truly major paradigm shift in the history of the world, and we're in the second one. So it's difficult for us to see it, like a goldfish in a bowl. He can't see the water in the bowl he's in. We're like that. The first major paradigm shift for mankind that we know of was from a flat world to a round world. And Galileo, you know, we know about that and what happened. And that took ages, and there are still people who haven't made that shift.
Yeah.
I bet that you and most of the young people you talk to talk about the sun rising and sun setting. That's nonsense. We've known for over 300 years that the sun doesn't rise and set, it stays still. We haven't changed our wording because we still haven't made that paradigm shift. And we don't say we enjoyed spinning into the dawn or spinning into the night or spinning out of the day. It's us that are turning, not the sun. But you see how long it's taken us to make that paradigm shift. Even I daily think of the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. And I'm stupid. It doesn't. All right, so that was the first major paradigm shift. Now, we're in the second one, and so it's difficult for us to see it. And that is the shift from a mechanistic worldview that has been the worldview of humans forever, frankly, no matter how holistically they may have thought they were thinking, and we're shifting to a holistic worldview. Now, some people have begun to make that shift more than others. Some were closer to it before. But that shift we are in, and it's got to occur, otherwise there will be no future. The planet will go on, but without us, unless we make the shift, as you call it, paradigm shift, from a mechanistic worldview to a holistic worldview. And with that, stop managing as though the world was mechanistic with our reductionist management, and begin managing using the holistic framework and a holistic context, or something better if somebody can develop it.
Yeah, and I, for instance, witness many institutions or many, let's say, individuals talking about holistic approach. And, you know, like, nobody's against, like, putting holistic into their textbooks, even though they are talking about something different, or they're not really integrating the whole understanding of the concept and of the framework. So do you see that as a problem, or you see it as a right step into the right direction?
Yes, you know, we think in words, and it's difficult for us because of that. If you and I talk, we would always say, I'm going down south on a holiday. Why do we say going down south? You're not going down. You're going sideways, upwards, you're just going south. Do you see it? But we refer to it, I'm going up north. And we think of north as being up and south being down. It's not at all. So it's very difficult because we think in words. Now, when people say they're taking a holistic approach, then I know they're not. or I know it won't work. Because that's like somebody saying to you, Durukan, I'm thinking of taking a pregnancy approach. You're pregnant or you're not.
Yeah.
You can't take a pregnancy approach. Do you get it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we either are managing holistically or we're not. So we would be arrogant if we thought we were the first humans in history to think holistically. There's lots of evidence that earlier people saw the connection with their environment much more closely than certainly city people do today. There's lots of evidence of that. There's apparently evidence in North America that the early people here, Native Americans, as they call them, tried to make their decisions thinking seven generations ahead of them, of the consequences, which is wonderful, but it didn't help them. They still decimated all the animals, replaced them with fire, and the degradation of the land began, and climate change began thousands of years ago because of it. We have to actually change the way we make decisions, because at the end of the day, humans have to pick up a tool and manage their lives and their environment. And you cannot do it without picking up a tool, as we talked of earlier, and you have to do it at the management level. Now, there are libraries full of management books. There are whole university departments that teach management, etc. All right? But if you look at them all, and you keep stripping the onion, peeling the onion, and going into any management approach, the most sophisticated management approaches in the world, keep peeling the onion, and right at the core, you will find, finally, somebody had to take an action. Somebody had to pick up a tool. And when you take it to that core, you find that it's the same core for every human, every culture. And you find that core at the center of human management decision is exactly the same core that you'll see with a bird that's using tool, an otter that's using tools, an ape that's using tools. Any tool-using animal you'll find at the center of the decision-making is the same core. So I think it was just genetically embedded in us.
Yeah, wow. So what you think can have with, you know, the impact of this holistic management on the, for instance, land pieces that are seen now, that are considered now as hopeless, you know, what is the promises of this holistic management into the hopeless, you know, land? Yeah.
No, I don't use the word hopeless at all. Think of it this way. For thousands of years, we wanted to fly. Many men died trying to fly. We didn't know how to fly. It's no good blaming anybody for not flying. We just couldn't fly. And then about the time of the Wright brothers, people discovered how to fly. And we could release human creativity. Nobody had an ego problem or anything else with that. And within 70 years, we were on the moon. The human spirit could fly. Humans could achieve tremendous things. I see enormous parallel with what we're talking about. For thousands of years, one civilization after another failed in all regions of the world. The longest existing civilization is Egypt, Lower Egypt, over 10,000 years. And it survived because of the destruction of Ethiopia and regions up the Nile that provided the silt and the soil to keep that civilization going. Art changed civilizations. They don't destroy them. It's farmers who destroy civilizations, right? So, or agriculturalists who destroy civilizations. So we've seen that going on throughout the history of the world. Now it's threatening us globally. It's threatening all of city-based civilization. Now, in about 1984, we discovered how to manage complexity. We discovered what was causing global desertification and climate change, reductionist management. Theoretically, we should have grasped that idea and run with it, and we should be on the moon by now with our creativity and everything, because most people are good. Most people are doing their best. There are reasons why we haven't moved as we should, but I keep coming back to that analogy with flying. If young people now will seize this and get it moving, the human spirit will fly. Nothing is hopeless. We have tremendous hope ahead of us.
Well, thank you. Thank you again, Alan. And one obstacle or potential that we may have or not will be institutions, I guess, and lack of leadership. So let's talk about that in a moment. Thank you all for listening our podcast with Ellen Savory.